We're really happy tonight to have Dr. Andrew Peterson. And Dr. Peterson is with the University of Iowa Sports Medicine Department. We're going to talk about football. We're going to talk about concussions. They've been definitely more in the news these last 3 or 4 years. There's, I believe, over 2,000 NFL players are suing the league for concussion and concussion-related problems. And I know that one NFL quarterback, Kurt Warner, who is a native of Iowa, he's used the term even scary to describe the idea of his two school-age sons playing football. So Dr. Peterson, along with a cohort, Dr. Kyle Smoot, both from the Iowa Sports Medicine Department, are working on developing a study of what might happen to some of the smaller players out there. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the Roadhouse, Dr. Peterson.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
As I just mentioned, of course, concussions are more and more familiar to sports fans, and also not only in football, but in other sports as well. But generally, when we talk about them, we're talking about professionals or college-level players. What got you interested in looking at some younger folks out there who might also be susceptible?
Injury risk for a concussion in football at the high school level and beyond is pretty well documented at this point. There's been several well-done studies identifying the incidence and prevalence of concussion and concussion-related symptoms in those age groups. The data is a little bit fuzzier in the age groups and in the younger age groups. And in the younger age groups is where the sport is expanding. So there are fewer and fewer athletes playing at the high school level and beyond, but football is still growing in grades 3 through 6. And so that's where we decided to focus our energies.
But you were mentioning that you're moving into looking at younger players?
Yeah, so there's good data at the high school and beyond high school level about incidence and prevalence of concussion, but the data in the younger age groups is a little bit weaker, and so that's where we've been focusing our energies. We're trying to evaluate what the true incidence of concussion is in these younger football players, and we're also trying to get an idea of if there's differences between the tackle and the flag football leagues.
You know, I think a lot of listeners, as well as myself here, have some idea about what a concussion is, but we really don't know exactly what it is. Could you tell us a little bit about what a concussion actually involves?
Sure. A concussion is a functional injury to the brain. I think a lot of us in sports medicine and around athletics are used to being able to look at an X-ray and an MRI and being able to see an injury, and that's not the case with concussion. We're really dependent on the function of the brain, and part of that is symptoms, and part of that is how someone behaves and acts. So what's happening at the cellular level is that the cell membranes themselves are disrupted by the shear forces when there's a blow to the head, and so you end up with leaky cell membranes that cause problems with excitatory neurotransmitters being leaked out and stimulating cells in the vicinity, and also problems where the normal cell membrane gradients, the ion gradients across those cell membranes become disrupted, and the cell has to work extra hard to try to protect themselves from those disruptions in the cell membrane gradient. And so when a brain is concussed, the individual cells are where the dysfunction is, the individual neurons, and the cells don't do a very good job of protecting themselves when they're concussed, and they have global dysfunction that causes a lot of the symptoms that someone who has a concussion has.
I'm assuming there's varying degrees of concussions that people experience.
Yeah, we've moved away from grading. So some of the older grading scales use terms like simple versus complex concussion or graded them 1, 2, and 3. And we've moved away from that. Those grading scales didn't really help us in terms of prognostication. They didn't tell us how people were going to do over the long term. They didn't tell us how long it would take people to return to play. And so we've really moved away from those types of grading scales when evaluating concussions. So now we treat each individual one as an individual injury. And so we don't try to make guesses based on what the initial symptoms look like as to how long someone's going to be out or what their return to play will look like.
You know, we're used to watching, at least people my age are used to watching boxing, especially in years past, where, of course, one boxer can get knocked out. Do you have to lose consciousness to be considered to be concussed?
No, absolutely not. In fact, loss of consciousness is a fairly rare event for a concussion. The vast majority of concussions do not involve loss of consciousness. But even more interesting is that loss of consciousness does not predict outcomes. So people who have loss of consciousness, at least loss of consciousness for less than a minute, don't do any worse than those who have a concussion but did not have a loss of consciousness. So getting knocked out doesn't help you very much when you're evaluating someone with a concussion or making decisions about when they might be able to get back to sport.
How do you recognize, especially in, I guess we're talking mainly about football, but how do you recognize a concussion when a player has just had a severe blow or has fallen hard?
Yeah, part of it is the symptoms that they have. So we're dependent at some degree on the athlete telling us how they feel and what symptoms they're having. And there are certain symptoms that go along with a concussion, and it's really a clinical diagnosis. In addition to that, we have several sideline concussion tests that we use to evaluate athletes who might be injured. So the most common of which is a sideline concussion tool called the SCAT-3, or Sideline Concussion Assessment Tool version 3, and that's been included with the most recent consensus statement on concussion management in sport. And most people who do concussion management and sideline care use that tool to evaluate people that they think might be concussed. Now, oftentimes, it's the coaches or the players that notice that a teammate is injured. So a coach, especially a position coach in football, might notice that their player isn't making the assignments they're expected to make, or that they're not playing as you would expect them to play. Or their teammates might notice that they're confused or not behaving normally on the field. And so oftentimes, it's the players and the coaches that notice a concussion before we do.
Do people have to, or do the youngsters really have to have a blow to the head, or can they be concussed just by hitting the ground hard?
Yeah, so they can definitely be concussed by hitting the ground hard. They can also be concussed with injuries that aren't direct blows to the head. So hard blows to the body can sometimes cause concussions. Injuries that have, or collisions that have a strong rotational component to them can cause concussions without there being a direct linear force applied to the head.
You know, we think about, and this conversation is mainly about football, but as a Minnesota Twins fans up here have noticed, we've had a couple of our star players that had concussions and have been out for varying degrees of time and varying degrees of ability problems. It's not just football.
Correct. Football gets all the attention because of the numbers. You know, there's 4.2 million football players every year in the United States, and it's got among the highest incidence of concussion at around 0.6 concussions per 10,000 exposures. And that's about twice what sports like basketball and wrestling are, and about tenfold what it is in baseball. So they still occur in these other sports, but from a sheer numbers standpoint, football is really still king when it comes to concussion.
Are these young people that you'll be doing the study about, are they more susceptible? I know youngsters, as they're growing, are not as developed for other problems that might occur to their body. How about the brain?
Yeah, so yes and no. If you look at the data in more severe types of brain injuries, so kids that are involved in motor vehicle collisions or have other types of traumatic brain injuries, they tend to recover better than adults do, so they're less likely to have long-term effects from, say, a subdural hematoma or an epidural hematoma. They tend to bounce back a little bit better than you or I would. However, the sport concussion data tells us that kids come back a little bit more slowly and report more symptoms when they do have a concussion. So we do think that a younger brain is maybe a little bit more vulnerable to concussion, meaning that it takes less of an injury to cause their problems, their symptoms might be a little bit more severe, and it might take them a little bit longer to recover. But we don't really know how they do over the long term. We don't know at this point whether there's differences down the line in younger kids compared to older kids.
We're speaking with Dr. Andrew Peterson, and Dr. Peterson is with the University of Iowa Sports Medicine Department, along with one of his colleagues, Dr. Kyle Smoot. They are developing a study to study younger athletes and younger people taking part in sports and possible concussion incidences. Can you tell us a little bit about your study, what parameters it'll have, and what you're looking at?
Yeah, so we just finished collecting our first year of data. We've partnered with several youth football organizations around Iowa. And what we're mainly doing is collecting and organizing data that was already being collected, but we just provided an infrastructure and provided a framework for people to be able to organize it and to be able to use it in a more meaningful way. And so the most important part of this is the denominator issue. So when you are looking at concussions or injuries of any type, it's hard to know what the incidence is unless you know what the exposure is. And so the most important thing we're collecting is how many kids are at each practice, how long their practices are, how many games they have, how many kids are participating in each of those games. So we have a good denominator so we can have a better idea of the actual incidence. Now, the other side of the equation is the numerator when you look at a ratio like that. And so on that side, we're collecting injury data. So every time a kid is injured in any way in these youth football, either practices or competitions, we collect information about their age, their gender, some basic demographic information, what position they're playing on the field, how they were injured, what type of injury they had. And hopefully those things will inform us better about the risks of playing youth football.
A lot of what we're hearing about concussions in the NFL are symptoms that are happening many years later, and in some cases, things like suicides are occurring and related to their earlier concussions.
Correct, yeah. So in the NFL data, there's another problem. There's a problem called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or also called tau encephalopathy, based on the protein that's deposed in the brain in people that have this problem. And it seems to be a problem more of people that have had long-term and chronic exposure to head injuries. At least at this point, there's very little data that it's a problem of youth and high school football. And even at the college level, there have been very few cases. And when you look at the vast number of players in at that level of play, you would think that you would see an epidemic if this was a real problem. But from a public health standpoint, there just doesn't seem to be at the college and high school level. However, what we're learning from professional football players does make people take pause about the risk that people at the lower levels might be putting themselves at.
You know, there's a certain culture in sports that I think any of us who have taken part in sports are well aware of, and you know, the thought that you can shake it off or tough it out or it's all for the team. How difficult is that, or how much does that add to the problem of relating to these concussions and how to take care of them?
Yeah, I think it's gotten better. Thinking back to when I was in training and back to when I played high school football, I agree with you. I think there was a bit of a culture of trying to play through it or trying to shake it off or walk it off. And that's gotten better. I think part of that has been education. I think fewer athletes are hiding concussion symptoms from their coaches, athletic trainers, and team physicians. I think that they're more likely to come to our attention, and I think we're more likely to make the right decisions on the sideline at this point. That said, I think we got to be careful about not restricting kids needlessly. I don't want to hold out every kid with a little bit of a headache during a football game. I want to make sure that who we're pulling out really needs to be out of the game. I think that's important for maintaining credibility as a team physician and medical personnel with related to sports in general, but also I think it's important for the athletes. They're not going to come forward with injuries if they think that if they say anything at all, they're going to get pulled out from the game.
I know athletes tend to push themselves really hard as part of participating in a sport and trying to be good at that sport. They probably don't even recognize their own limits or that it's a problem.
I think it's gotten better with concussion, though. Frankly, the awareness is dramatically better than it was even a few years ago. You're not going to find a high school kid that doesn't know what a concussion is. You're not going to find a college athlete who thinks that it's okay to play through a concussion symptom. They at least know at a more philosophical level that it's not right to continue to play through those symptoms. And so most people are reporting them now, I think. You know, 10 years ago, there was some pretty good data that about half of high school football players that had a concussion did not report their symptoms, but that study needs to be redone. I think that the reporting has gotten a lot better over the last few years.
And the youngsters that you're mainly dealing with, like flag football or just beginning to play tackle football, are they becoming more aware too? Or actually, are their coaches and the people who are organizing the sports being shown this problem and how to recognize it?
Yeah, it's on everybody's mind. I don't think there's anyone that's around football anymore that isn't aware of the concussion problem, isn't aware what a concussion is, and that they should hold people out if they suspect an athlete has a concussion. I think the awareness part and the education part has gotten much, much better. Mm-hmm. I think the next tough step is knowing when athletes have had too many injuries and knowing when an athlete should retire from contact and collision sports after repeated concussions. We're not quite there yet. We don't really know how many concussions are too many or what other types of personal or genetic factors might influence someone's long-term risk.
You know, one thing that has come to my attention a little bit, I've heard it on talk shows or something, is that as they make helmets safer, it seems like more people, especially at the NFL level, are leading with their helmet instead of, you know, letting it be used as it should be, because they feel more invincible because the helmet's better, or supposed to be better.
Yeah.
Is that in fact true?
Yeah. Well, the evidence would suggest the opposite has happened. You know, the peak of spearing and cervical spine-related injuries from using the head as a weapon was in the early 1970s, and it's really been a decline ever since. The NFL has made a couple of rule changes, including a rule change this year that prevents running backs from leading with the head at the end of a play. And I think that part has gotten better. Now, players at the same time have gotten bigger and faster and stronger, and the collisions are more violent. But I don't know if we've actually seen much of a change in the concussion risk with improved tackling technique and less use of the head as a weapon. But to get back to your point about improving helmet technology, there's more and more evidence that the helmet itself doesn't matter. I think this is a common misconception in concussion that the helmet can prevent a concussion in some way. It doesn't. Helmets do a great job of preventing skull fractures, bleeding into the brain, and death, but they don't do anything to prevent concussion. In fact, one of my colleagues from the University of Wisconsin just did a very elegant study demonstrating that the age of the helmet, whether or not it's been reconditioned, the brand of the helmet, whether it's a more expensive model or a cheaper model, those things don't have any impact on someone's concussion risk.
We've been speaking with Dr. Andrew Peterson, and Dr. Peterson is with the University of Iowa Sports Medicine Department. He's in the middle of a study of young athletes, and particularly young football players, and concussion-related injuries as they play either tackle or flag football. Is there a website that people can look at that you developed that may have more information for them?
We don't have a particular one. We have a website related to our sports concussion clinic, so people in Iowa or around Iowa City that want to come see us can go to uisportsmedicine.com or to uihealthcare.org. But if you want to learn more about concussions, the CDC website is really fantastic. So the CDC Heads Up program is very good, and just Googling CDC and concussions will lead you to some very good information about concussions, both concussions in children and concussions in older people.
Well, Dr. Peterson, I want to thank you so much for coming aboard our show tonight and enlightening us a little bit about the problem. And we hope to learn more about your study as it progresses.
You bet. Thanks for having me.